A new president is moving on Washington, D.C. with a promise to drain the swamp. Given the extent of that swamp and the protections established to maintain it, we simply must ask, is it possible to drain the swamp that is Washington, D.C.?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned to the 1087th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in St. Petersport who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby. Hello, Jason.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Hey, Jason, do you ever think of Washington, D.C. as a swamp?
Wow, that's a pretty interesting analogy there. Brings up quite the image.
Do you ever think of it that way?
You know, I could see the bubbles right now.
Okay, there you go. Also with us today, we have university intern producer Olivia Duncan. Olivia, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program.
Hi, Michael.
Good go. Now, let me ask you, Olivia, do you hear your fellow students or instructors up at the university speak of Washington, D.C. in terms of it being a swamp?
You know, I believe we're a very skeptical generation, and so we know it can get messy, but it's also a buzzword, and there's not a lot of clarification on what a swamp really is.
Well, there you go. That's the perfect opportunity to launch in just exactly what the heck we're talking about. Folks, the new president is moving on Washington, D.C. with a promise to drain the swamp. What is the swamp, and how would one go about draining it? A good place to start for looking for answers would be the United States Department of Agriculture, which is an agency with $19 billion budget that grows nothing and sells nothing. For what USDA does do, consider the Wall Street Journal op-ed penned by James Bovard. Listen carefully. USDA has paid Brazilian cotton farmers $750 million to grow cotton in competition with U.S. farmers, to whom the agency pays about $1.5 billion a year to grow cotton in competition with Brazilian farmers. USDA maintains import quotas and price supports that drive U.S. sugar prices to double or triple the world price, thus eliminating over 120,000 U.S. food manufacturing jobs. USDA will spend $7.5 billion this year guaranteeing the price of crops buyers may or may not wish to buy. And who gets the money USDA hands out? The top 1% of U.S. farmers, subsidy recipients receive 26% of the subsidy payments. 1% gets 26%. The top 20% of subsidy recipients receive 91%. Of all subsidy payments. The bottom 80% of U.S. farm subsidy recipients receive 9% of all subsidy payments, and the largest group of those receiving farm subsidies have an average net worth of $2.586 million. Wow. Well, given the amount of taxpayer monies being handed out by the federal government in Washington, D.C., and the number of people and organizations that receive that money, and the extent to which these people and organizations will fight to keep the money coming, we simply must ask, is it possible to drain the swamp that is Washington, D.C.? Well, here to help us get the conversation going, we have the author of that Living Off the Fat of Washington, D.C. op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, Jim Bovard, author and anti-czar. Jim, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on your show.
So pleased. Now, how did you get the moniker anti-czar?
Well, that was my New York Times reporter, Mark Leibovich. And he had he saw an article I did about in the early 2000s that attacking the notion of federal czars. We've had a drug czar, we've had an energy czar, we've had all kinds of other czars, and they've both basically been a crock of nonsense. Because it's guys who usually guys who strut around with a big title and act like they've got a magic wand, but it's a magic wand that doesn't fix anything. But that's typical for Washington, D.C. You have all these people with big titles, and they achieve almost nothing good.
They're just like you and I, right?
You know, I would hate to insult you by saying that you're the same as a Washington czar. You know?
Okay.
I don't know you that well, but, mm-hmm. I'm trying to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, good to go. Well, Jim, your writings have been publicly denounced by the FBI, the Transportation Security Administration, the Secretary of Agriculture, Housing and Urban Development, Postmaster General, U.S. International Trade Commission, Equal Opportunity Commission, U.S. Agency for International Development, DEA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the Sierra Club, and American Civil Liberties Union, and the Washington Post. You're doing pretty good.
Well, I mean, I enjoy raising a ruckus.
Well, this is a pretty big ruckus. It seems like you're leaving no stone unturned when it comes to Washington, D.C. So new president coming to moving on Washington, D.C. with the battle cry, drain the swamp. Why do you think the term drain the swamp caught fire as it did with the electorate?
I think it's a very good phrase. Whether he's able to deliver is another question, but it's a phrase that captures how a lot of Americans view the federal government and the class of politicians. Because for decade after decade, politicians have lied, they've stretched their power, they've spent trillions of dollars that they did not have, and they've loaded us with debt. So many of the federal programs are, absurd at first glance, such as the sugar program that you mentioned. I mean, we've had sugar protection since the 1800s, and according to some of the analyses, and during the last 20 years, the sugar program has destroyed more than 10 times as many jobs as the total number of sugar growers. But people in Washington don't care because it's a gravy train. You've got a sugar lobby that gives a lot of money to congressmen and presidents, and it doesn't really matter, because these are not the folks who are paying the price for bad federal policies, and that's true across the board in Washington, D.C. You've had all these bad policies and wasteful spending, and the primary effect has been to drive up housing values in the D.C. area very high.
Well, it's the richest city in the world, is it not?
Some people say it is. I don't know. There's different standards, but certainly many of the wealthiest counties in the U.S. are in the Washington, D.C. area.
Well, in looking at who gets, and of course the USDA is just one little agency in a whole city full of agencies and a whole government full of agencies, although a big one. And it hands out a lot of money, not only to very rich farmers, but also to very poor people who get food stamps and whatnot. About one-fifth of the country is now taking food stamps from the federal government. So
I think it's more like one-seventh.
One-seventh, somewhere in that neck of the woods. A lot of people are getting food stamps from the federal government, and a lot of very wealthy farmers are getting money from the federal government. Everybody in the middle seems to be paying for this, right?
So, right, and I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I'm trying to figure out who's in favor of draining the swamp and who is not. I mean, those who are getting the money certainly are not going to stand by idly while somebody tries to drain the swamp. So is it possible, do you think, to drain the swamp?
Well, it might be possible to drain some of the corners or at least pave them over. It comes down to a question of how much elbow grease and capital Trump is willing to use to go after some of these boondoggles. In the Wall Street Journal piece last month, I made sure I started with the example of Brazil, because the U.S. has been, since the 1930s, the U.S. government has just showered cotton plantation owners with a huge amount of money, far more on average than what other farmers get. And there's no end in sight to this. The U.S. government has messed up the world cotton market so many times. It has especially victimized farmers in West Africa, who are a lot of cotton producers. They're very low income, but the U.S. programs have driven down world cotton prices many times. So that's a good place to start, because it's possible that those African nations or India will bring another case against the U.S. at the World Trade Organization that could require the U.S. again to pay compensation to foreign farmers for the privilege of showering our cotton plantation farmers with our tax dollars.
And it seems like the more government tries to help, the more confusing and convoluted and impossible the situation becomes. Any truth in that observation?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. If you look at back the agriculture policy since the 1930s.
Well, wait a minute. We have to hold that thought, okay? And we are looking at agriculture. This is the Food Chain Radio program. I am Michael Olson. Today we're asking a big question. Can the swamp that is Washington, D.C. be drained? With us today to help us address the issue, we have James Bovard, who is an author and who's been given the title of all kinds of titles, One Man Truth Squad, Anti-Czar Czar, the Roving Inspector General of the Modern State. And you, what do you think? Do you think we can drain the swamp that is Washington, D.C.? Right back.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land. We can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Welcome back out there. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking about the coming of a new president, moving on Washington, D.C. with the battle cry, drain the swamp. Well, what on earth is a swamp, and why did that term catch fire with the electorate? Well, that's what the question we have on the table. Is it possible to drain the swamp? We have with us James Bovard, who is an author and a gadfly about Washington, D.C. It seems like everybody there ducks when you come around with your pen and paper and says, oh, God, here comes James Bovard. We're in trouble now. Producer Olivia came up with a great question during the break, James, and I'd like her to ask that of you, Olivia.
Yeah, I was wondering, what exactly is a czar?
There you go.
Czar is a term originally from Russia prior to the Soviet Revolution. A czar is a leader of a nation who basically has unlimited power and who's not constrained by constitution, a parliament, or anything else. There was a wonderful comment that I think czar... I forgot the name of the czar. He's around 1830, and a Russian czar. He said that it was an illusion that he ruled Russia. It was actually ruled by 10,000 clerks, and it's a little bit the same with the agriculture department, because you've got the agriculture secretary who, on paper, has this vast power and can snap his fingers and throw markets into turmoil. But you've got a vast number of bureaucrats who are just kind of move kind of slow and. Are just kind of low energy. It's interesting that the USDA headquarters is dominated by the South Building, which was built, I think, in the early 1930s. And I was talking to someone recently, and they explained that it was actually modeled after a prison. And that's the sense you get with these endless hallways and these open areas in between. And I've spent a fair amount of time there, and you just see all these tired guys walking down the hallway with their coffee cups. You think, yeah, these are not the folks who are going to save American agriculture.
And with respect to why we have czars, I mean, we have all of those people, we have the secretary. Why does the government appoint czars when they're kind of like a supernumerary? I mean, it's just like an add-on of some kind.
Well, it's worse than that, because it's more like a bait and switch. Congress and presidents have not shown the diligence to make good laws, clear laws that would actually people could understand would serve the public interest. So instead, the thing they pretend to do is vest all this arbitrary power in people who get christened by the president or whoever, and those folks are supposed to solve the problems that are created by all the laws and other federal policies. This is simply a symbol of politicians being either cowardly or lazy and not being willing to fix the messes they've already made.
Which, and if we go back to the whole notion of the cotton, we can really see how the messes do get made. We have paid the farmers of Brazil $750 million to grow cotton in competition with our farmers who are growing cotton. Why do we pay Brazilian farmers to grow cotton in competition with our farmers?
There was a ruling by the World Trade Organization that the U.S. cotton program unfairly affected foreign farmers. There are convoluted rules for the WTO, but this was a clear case in which the U.S. program had disrupted the world cotton markets and harmed foreign cotton growers. This is a case that percolated, I think, for about 8 years. It was finally settled in 2010. And the Obama administration, in order to avoid having U.S. exports penalized, chose to pay the Brazilian farmers.
So rather than solve the problem, it seems like we just pile on more problems on top of the problems. And thus, and you know, the analogy of a swamp really does come into play, doesn't it? I mean, it's almost like you go out into the swamp and you get lost in the muck and murk and lose your way.
Very much. And it's typical of federal agriculture, because going back to the 1930s, the farm and the agriculture policymakers have had one foot on the brake and one foot on the accelerator at the same time. You have consistently had the politicians and the government sending mixed signals to farmers. Government would drive prices up higher than market levels, and then the government would come in and impose supply controls on farmers. There was a big case in raisins out there in California. Supreme Court finally ruled on that a year or two ago that said that the USDA had no right to seize almost half of a raisin farmer's harvest simply to drive up raisin prices. But it's bizarre. It took the Supreme Court over 50 years to make a clear ruling on the agriculture marketing law, which did more to shaft farmers than practically any other law out there.
And the situation seems to be endemic throughout the entire USDA food chain. I mean, you have cotton, you have sugar, you have peanuts, you have insurance, you have marketing orders, you have it all. It seems like the same situation occurs in each little office through the entire office complex.
Very much, and it's fascinating that a lot of the individual offices seem utterly clueless what the other parts of the agency are doing. So you have contradictory policies all the time, which simply achieve nothing but burning even more tax dollars at a higher, faster rate.
And there we go. Well, when you look at all of the people who, you know, make money or are living on this incredible food chain, you got to wonder, is anybody interested in correcting the situation or dealing with it or draining the swamp? Who is interested in draining the swamp, given the fact that so many people are making a living with it?
Well, this is something which does interest some taxpayer groups. There are some members of Congress, usually from urban areas, who are very opposed to this kind of nonsense. But
urban areas? Why is that?
Well, that's a mystery, you know. You got the urban areas whose members of Congress whose constituents are getting screwed by the high food prices for sugar and other things and are in favor of getting rid of the programs which make life harder for a lot of their citizens.
Mm-hmm. So, but aren't a lot of those citizens receiving food stamps as well? I mean, we're talking about urban populations. It seems like a lot of them, what is it, 1/7 of the nation is taking food stamps now? It seems like a lot of them would be in cities, and why would they want to get rid of their cut of the piece of the pie?
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, it doesn't really make sense to have the food stamps and the farm subsidies in the same farm bill, but it's simply a deal which basically guarantees that the rich farmers will get support from some urban congressmen with poor consumers, because those poor people will also get government food stamp aid. So
it's almost like you have one department, which is a very big department. If anybody's been to Washington, D.C., you see the USDA's building there, and you go, oh, okay. But you have, you know, some people in the USDA are charged with the responsibility of supporting farmers with price supports and import quotas. So you guaranteeing that the price of food is going to be high. And the other branch of the USDA is making sure everybody's subsidized so that they can pay for that expensive food. Am I off base there?
Well, there are big elements of both of those things. Most folks are not subsidized with food stamps, and there are many small farmers who get nothing from the government. And the farm programs are so convoluted. For instance, from the 1930s through the early 2000s, the federal peanut program sharply drove up U.S. peanut prices. And the 2014 Farm Bill, a new peanut program was put in place. Right now, that's serving to drive down the price of peanuts in the marketplace. It doesn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense before. But you got all these politicians and bureaucrats throwing all these wrenches into the agricultural market and making farmers dependent on Washington. That's one of the real tragedies, because so many farmers are a lot smarter and a lot harder working than the bureaucrats or the congressmen. And these are folks who could do a lot better job on their own if the government wasn't messing up the market at so many different levels.
And can we drain that swamp? Can we make it sensible? Is it possible? New president coming to town, that's his mandate, drain the swamp. What do you think, folks think out there? Is it possible? 831-479-1080 is our number today, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and call. Well, folks, a new president is moving on Washington, D.C. with a promise to drain that swamp. How do you define that swamp? Well, you know, if you look at who's benefiting by having Washington, D.C. be a swamp, you got to look at the people who get the money from an organization like USDA, an agency with $19 billion budget that grows nothing and sells nothing. What does it do with all that money? Well, it hands it out to those people who have been deemed acceptable in the light of those in Washington, D.C. Top 1% of U.S. farm subsidy recipients receive 26% of the subsidy payments. Top 20% get 91% of all subsidy payments. Those on the bottom, those small farmers, 80% of the U.S. farmers in the U.S. get 9% of all farm subsidies. Not much money for the little guy, lots of money for the big guy. So is it possible to go into Washington, D.C. and drain that swamp so that it makes sense? That's the question we have on the table today with James Bovard, author and gadfly of Washington, D.C. It seems like, Jim, your work has been pretty much shouted down by just about everybody in Washington, D.C. Can you think of anybody there that you haven't pissed off?
Well, and first of all, I wouldn't say it's been shouted down. I'd say it's been shouted at.
Oh, okay, shouted at, yeah.
Yeah, shouted at, because, hey, I'm still here. I'm still muckraking. I'm still being a pain in the butt to some of the agencies. Let's see, some folks at the Government Accountability Office like my work, and there's a couple inspector general offices that like my work. Let me see, there's a couple former congressmen who liked it. Ron Paul said some nice things about it.
So not everybody then?
No, not everybody, but it's never been my goal to win a popularity contest. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy going in and digging and then trying to find the facts the government is hiding, and then to use those to explain government policies in a way. A lot of these policies are so complex. Part of the reason they're so complex is government's trying to hide where it's took the money. Mm-hmm. And so to write about things in a way that makes them clear and outrageous if they're outrageous policies, that's fun.
Wow. Okay, let's go to the phones right now, folks. We're going to go to Rory. Rory, welcome to the Food Chain. Happy to have you aboard today.
Thank you. And one other quick aside, Caesar is the root for czar. It's also the root for Kaiser.
Wow.
Just so people know. So when you think czar, Kaiser, think Caesar. Not unlimited power, obviously, because Julius was let go, relieved of his duties in an unceremonious fashion. But anyway, you know, it's interesting when you sit here in California, most ag in California is not subsidized. I understand there's a large dairy industry, milk, cheese, and whatnot, and they're probably getting some subsidies at some level. Mm-hmm. Maybe cotton, maybe rice, maybe your guest could comment on that. But most of California agriculture is quite prosperous without all the direct payment subsidies.
May I challenge you on that, Rory?
Well, I know people argue and they'll say, oh, the water's subsidized.
And labor.
You know, insofar as social programs?
In social programs and the support, you know, when they're not working, you know, they're supported by the community as well.
Yeah, well, unemployment and whatnot, that's something that they pay into directly. Yes, it's not a perfect system, but that goes to, you know, who's been controlling the border, who allowed labor to get so out of whack.
Well, isn't that another example, though, of how things have become so swampish? One time we had an organized guest worker program, and Washington got rid of that, and now we have a mess.
You could do a whole show on why the Bracero program went away, and it was the well-intended ideas of people saying, well, we need to provide labor for our native population that wants to work, but then they found out that people didn't want to or didn't have the skill set or whatever the case was. But all that aside, direct subsidy payments, in my opinion, are faulty, and they just need to be phased out. I mean, look at the corn industry. You've got ethanol, people growing corn to produce ethanol. What a waste, energy waste. High fructose corn syrup finding its way into every aspect of our diet, making people sick, you know, long-term problems with the excessive sugar, excessive high fructose corn syrup.
Rory, that's a great reasons why, you know, you look at Washington, D.C. and can see it as a swamp. But the question is, do you think it's possible to drain the swamp?
Yeah, it's called crony capitalism. This is what's been going on. These programs are they're way past their original intent. I just say phase them out, choke them off. If you don't have the money to run these bureaucracy, guess what? All those little bureaucrats running around dutifully doing their work will shrink down to their proper size or be eliminated altogether.
Well, that's a good one.
I wonder if I could jump in here.
Jump in, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, very good comments, Rory. I appreciate that. He's 100% right. California farmers are less subsidized than they are in a lot of other places in the country. Rice and cotton are heavily subsidized, but most of the products, the farm products grown in California, are not directly bankrolled by the feds. It's different in the South and the Midwest, where you've got so many farmers hooked on the corn program policies, which drive up the price of corn so high, have done that in the past anyhow. It's interesting as far as the idea of phasing farm programs out. This is something that Newt Gingrich and the GOP promised to do in the 1996 Farm Bill. It was labeled the Freedom to Farm Act, and the subsidies were they came up with a new name for the subsidies. It was a market transition payment, and it worked out so well for the politicians that they kept extending it, and then just said, "What the heck? Let's keep it permanent." There was no way to fix the farm programs without abolishing them.
And well, that's what Rory was suggesting. Why don't you just take the money away? So why don't we just take the money away?
Well,
Newt Gingrich said we're going to take the money away, and then gave them the money.
Sort of said that. I mean, you know, there was so much rascality about that program. I almost had doubts about his character.
Okay, so what about just taking the money away? What if the new president rode into town in Washington D.C. and turned off the money?
that is the best possible solution, because there is no way to make these programs rational and to serve the public, because there are so many different politicians waiting to pull a string, throw in a phrase in any appropriations bill, or do some other backdoor routine that would guarantee that the programs are wasteful and often destroy farmers' freedom. So there is no solution except to get rid of the farm subsidy programs.
But to get rid of those programs, we're going to have to take money away from people who have been getting it for a long, long time. And not just a little money, but a lot of money. And they're going to be sitting there at their front gate with a shotgun saying, you can't take my money away because I earned this money by virtue of the fact that it's mine, or something like that, and you can't have it. 831-479-1080. What do you think out there? Do you think it possible to drain the swamp of Washington, D.C.? Maybe Dave knows. We'll pick him up when we get back from this quick message. Thanks to Rory for his comments. Great ones. And what about you? Do you think it possible for the new president to ride into town, Washington, D.C., and drain that swamp? That's the promise. 831-479-1080. Right back. Welcome back. Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Jim Bovard, and you, 831-479-1080. You know, it's our money. We send it to Washington, D.C., to all of these agencies. They take our money and they do things with it. But what do they do things with it? You know, take the Department of Agriculture for an example. We give it $19 billion a year. And this is an agency that does not grow anything, does not sell anything. What the heck does it do? Jim, what does the USDA do?
Too much. I mean, it is involved in all kinds of different activities, most of which it has never demonstrated competence for. It is one of the things it does is subsidize corporations and associations foreign advertisements for their to try to boost agriculture-related exports. And so you have U.S. taxpayers who are forced to pay for doggy food advertisements in Europe and to pay for beer.
You're kidding. You're kidding, right?
No, this is sad but true.
Wow.
This is sad but true. This is the market access program, which has never made a lick of sense. It was something that Congress came up with in the 1985 Farm Bill. And you've had all these federal audit reports that said it doesn't really help exports. It's not very well evaluated. But, you know, Congress and USDA enjoys throwing money at corporations and various associations. And it's a huge boondoggle, and it's been recognized as such for 30 years, and Washington, D.C. won't put it out of its misery.
So it always comes down to this notion that I can make things better if I take money from them and give it to them.
Well, it works out well for the politicians. I mean,
since you're in the middle, you're the one that's taking money from those over there and giving them to those over there. You're the one that the money goes through. So that's a pretty good deal.
Well, this has certainly helped their reelection rates of Congress. It's interesting. The poll showed that like over 80%, almost 90% of Americans disapprove of Congress as an institution. Almost all the congressmen get reelected almost every election. And this is partly because of all the money that they hand out and all the kickbacks that they receive.
Well, what do you think, Dave?
Yeah, hi, Michael and Jim. I was wondering about the WTO. And as I recall, when it was formed, back when GATT was signed, it seemed like we'd given up all of our sovereignty to the WTO. So I guess the question would be, how do you drain the WTO out of our trade? And is it possible? Because I remember them saying that once we did it, we'd be giving all the power to them.
Well, I guess that's kind of true in light of the cotton situation, where the WTO suggested if you want to continue subsidizing your domestic cotton farmers, you have to pay the Brazilian cotton farmers to shut up. Something like that.
Yeah, how do we get out of the WTO? I've wondered that for a long time. Is it possible?
Jim?
Well, it would be possible to withdraw from the WTO. I don't think that'd be a good idea. It's interesting, going back, there was a Bill Clinton's trade guy was the person who pushed through the change in the name. It used to be the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs. GATT, and it was a nice dull acronym, and people didn't pay much attention. But as soon as you called it the World Trade Organization, it seems a lot more menacing. It's basically simply a referee for international trade. And there are going to be trade disputes, and it would be good to have an honest referee. Some of the WTO decisions have been really bad. Some of the others have been justified. The WTO ruling against the U.S. cotton program, I think, was justified. It's a program which has screwed up the world cotton markets and hurt a lot of foreign farmers. I don't want to see the U.S. pull out of the WTO, and I'm totally opposed to Donald Trump's saber rattling on protectionism. That would be going in absolutely the wrong direction, and that's something that would give a lot more power to the politicians and bureaucrats once they're able to auction off trade barriers.
There you go. Now, one of the things I hear Trump talking about is not necessarily isolationism, but getting a good deal.
Instead of
saying no to world to international trade, you know, to making favorable deals. I mean, he seems like a deal maker.
That's true, but I don't trust politicians who make deals on trade because we almost never learn until later that consumers got screwed.
It's always the middle class consumers, I think, or it seems to me, they're the ones that get screwed. Am I wrong there? It seems like when the top 1% of the farm subsidy recipients get 26% of all the money, it seems crazy.
Well, all right, to take a step back to the idea that the trade deals would screw the middle class more than others, I did a piece for the Wall Street Journal almost 30 years ago looking at our tariff code, and many of the highest tariffs there were on products consumed by poor people. For instance, there was zero tariff on Perrier water from France, and I believe a 40% tariff on orange juice coming in from Brazil. There was almost no tariff on mink stoles, but for children's polyester clothing, there was a tariff of around 35%. There were a lot of other examples of how low-income consumers were being hit far harder than the upper class by U.S. trade barriers.
Okay, it's all very plain to see that it's very, very murky indeed. And that would be the swamp that is Washington, D.C. When we get back from this break, our university intern has a question to kind of help us out of this murk and this swamp. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. We have Jim Bovard, who is a writer and a thinker and a gadfly about Washington, D.C. Seems like he's been shouted at by just about everybody there. And so we're happy to hear what he has to say today about the possibility of being able to drain that swamp. Right back. Welcome back, folks. We have a few minutes left on the Food Chain Radio program. Today we've been talking with James Bovard, who is a columnist or an author, a book author, 10 books, each of which seems to poke a little fun at the machinations of Washington, D.C. And we're looking here in the very near future. A new president is moving on Washington, D.C. with a promise to drain the swamp. So we've been kind of talking about the swamp in terms of one federal agency, the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, an agency that receives $19 billion in our money, but it does not grow anything and it does not sell anything. So what on earth does it do with all that money? And what it does do is make things really kind of confusing and murky. And so in that regard, our university intern has kind of a good question to kind of take us out. So go ahead, Olivia.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm wondering, we're talking a lot about draining the swamp, and we know what we don't want. But what does that look like in policy? What does that look like in practice? What is a drained swamp?
Yeah, what does it look like if we succeed in draining the swamp, Jim?
Okay, it's a great question. The goal we should have is that for all of American agriculture should be like most of California agriculture, with no federal subsidies and with no federal marketing restrictions, with the government not screwing up farmers' livelihoods, Just get the government out of the business and let the chips fall where they may, and let farmers become a lot more productive and efficient because they aren't having to look over their shoulder at a federal bureaucrat.
Yes, but with each federal election, we see politicians going into the heartland and promising to maintain those subsidies. And there's a lot of money being handed out to those farmers, and those farmers don't want to compete.
Well, the fundamental problem we have in this country is that politicians have far too much power. They've got far too much power over agriculture, over taxpayers, over spending. I mean, the farm programs are only one piece of the pie. Politicians need to be stripped of their power almost across the board.
Wow. Okay. Is it possible to strip the power from politicians? Because what good would they be then?
Not much, but at least they would not do as much harm. That's the thing, that the politicians as a class are doing a great deal of harm to this country. And that's why Trump's phrase, drain the swamp, appealed to people, because it made a lot of people think politicians would have less power to mess up their lives.
Woo. So how does he go about doing that, Jim?
Well, you focus on high-profile examples of waste, like the farm subsidies. You get rid of those. There's a lot of other federal programs that should be abolished. Government should stop throwing so many wrenches into people's lives, which is what it's been doing more and more with each passing
But
decade.
When government does that, it takes away a lot of the protections with which we have become accustomed to living. Uncle Sam's going to take care of me. I don't have to take care of myself. Government will protect me.
All right. Well, okay, for instance, as far as the idea of the government protecting you, right now I'm driving a Ford that's about 15, 16 years old, and the federal ethanol policy is hurting me because it's helping screw up my car engine. And this is something that EPA and the government has admitted. It's so inefficient.
And it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. Jim Bovard, how do we tune in with you?
I've got a website, jimbovard.com, where I post articles of mine that appear in USA Today or Wall Street Journal.
Thank you so much for joining us on The Food Chain today. Much appreciative. Folks, we're going to file this program under Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't. Thank you for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.